Hey, hi everyone. All right, let's turn this a little bit. And we are live. Hi, this is Gloria from Heart of the City, San Diego, and we are going live. I am here with my guest, Dinko Zambrano, and we're streaming from a stream platform called StreamYard. So we're going to give StreamYard a little bit of credit there. Thank you, StreamYard. But we're also on going live on YouTube, we're on Facebook, and then we're going to be on all the audio platforms, and we'll send out all the links for you after the interview. But we have someone in the background sharing this all out, so we hope that this gets all shared out to you guys so you guys can know where we are, where to find us. And so my guest here, which I am like totally excited to have all the way from Peru. And so let me just give you a little backstory, okay? So a lot of you have known me for a long time, been following me around and stuff, all on, Heart of the City, San Diego. I'm in LA today, so sorry, San Diego, but we are going global, okay? So I'm in LA, but you guys, a lot of have followed me all around San Diego and interviewed a lot of business owners and ministry leaders and people like that. And some of my friends that are in the ministry as well, all over Praise Chapel and East Lake, the East Lake community and Rock Church and all you guys, I love you. You are awesome. But today, I have a friend here, and he is from, we're from the same fellowship, Praise Chapel Christian Fellowship, and which is world known and things. But he was over in Peru doing some work there, an amazing work, and we're going to get to that. He's going to share his testimony on that. But Facebook has allowed us to make friends kind of globally all over the place with so many different people that it's exciting that we get, when we finally get to meet in person, that we could that we're connected, we can lean on each other, we get to share a gospel message and bring it to you guys here on this global platform. Isn't that crazy? I absolutely love it. I don't know about you guys, but I just like, this is amazing to me. So today, and a lot of you know that I've been a missionary. I was a missionary for 14 years, so I have a missionary's heart, and I love, love, love to get connected with other missionaries. Have a good friend in Poland and lots of people that I know in England and just all over Europe and Spain and different places, Romania and stuff like that. So today's guest is Dinko Zambrano, and Dinko is kind of a revolutionary, not kind of, but is a revolutionary, and he has changed kind of the setting or the environment of where he is from. And he has this crazy, crazy testimony of like, he has this long profile
Profile. That is
So Dinko, I want this to come from your mouth,
Okay.
because you have this wild, crazy, background here of a mother who got pregnant at 15 years old, and then there was a lot of alcohol and abuse involved in your background. You were kind of like in the mafia type thing, dude. You were like a bouncer in the clubs, this guy, So kind of share with us a little bit of the beforehand and that kind of background, and then tell us like, and then bring us up to current in a little bit.
Sure. But first, I would like to start by saying a disclaimer that every person I mentioned in my testimony, my story of life, like my dad, my stepfather, my mother, and many other people, in their moment, they hurt me as a kid or whatever. Now I have very good relationship with them.
I like
Thank
that.
God I've been able to restore and a relationship with my family. And my stepfather, even though he died, he also, we were able to do that. So just in case, this is a testimony. It's not coming out of the heart that is wounded, you know, resented. It's just part of my story of life. And I'm glad to share that with a healed heart.
Yes, I totally love that.
Yes, as I mentioned, you know, was born in a broken home. Whatever the shame of testimony, I try to say this, my life had all the ingredients for failure. All the ingredients for failure. You know, broken home, my father in that time, he was, you know, he drank a lot, he was abusive. Then my mom, she was like just a teenager, you know. She was 16 when I was born. And my dad was 17 years older. So 15 was 32, you know, it's like,
wow, that's a big difference.
Yeah, it is. And that's how I grew up. I share also how when my mom ran away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years later, she met this gentleman that ended up being kind of the same thing, you know, and, then for a period of time, she sent me to live with my grandparents, and I shared. I think I mentioned that also.
Yeah,
you know, only to find out that my grandfather, he was childless.
Yeah.
So all that year that I lived with them was hell.
Yeah.
You know, and so all this resentment and all this anger and all this frustration as a little kid growing up was inside of me, and I had no way to express that because it was practically by myself, you know. Everybody, I was like, not everybody, my mom was busy trying to, you know, put food on the table, you know.
Yeah.
And that when I was growing up, when I was 14, 15, around that age, I got to go with these guys, you know. I was 14 and this guy was 18 and he was like, hey, Dingo, come on, you know, don't worry, just forget about you. Forget about your old man. Come on, and he was the first one I remember.
Yeah.
How he gave it my first pot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it all started.
Wow. That's crazy. So during this time, so you went back to, like, you know, how your mom got pregnant and, you know, you had the alcohol abuse of grandfather and all these things in your background things. Tell us a little bit, like, you know, what were the feelings that you were feeling in this moment? Because I want, like, kind of the audience to understand, like, you know, we get saved and you see us all goody two shoes and stuff now, you know, but there were real true feelings involved, you know, because I come from an abusive background too, quite the same, you know, stuff in it. And my dad was a biker, and there was a lot of violence and, and things like that. Now, I never did the drugs or any of that. I ran far away from as far as I can go from all that kind of thing. And I thank God that I had people who intervened in my life that were good. And I believe it was God. But there were true feelings. There were, you know, feelings of, like, hate and anger.
Oh, sure.
You know,
not only hate and anger and the desire of vengeance, but also a huge amount of suffocating sensation of fear.
Yeah.
I was a very fearful little boy. You know, I wasn't one I was bullied at school. You know, elementary school, everyone would take my lunch money or whatever, you know, I brought cookies or whatever they took. So they would take my color pencils, and it was every single day and a half. And it came to a point that I didn't want to go out on break, you know, between classes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have time to go on the, you know, the yard. But I just want to stay in the classroom. I was so afraid I didn't want to go out.
Yeah.
So, and at the beginning was fear.
Yeah.
And I believe if there's someone listening to this, they will relate to what I'm sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that fear, when it's not addressed, it will take you one of two directions, depending on your personality. It will take you to depression. Mm-hmm. You know, that will take you to maybe even try to kill, you know, take your own life.
Right.
Or it will take you to violence.
Yeah.
You know, you become very violent. The second option was my case. I became violent. So that fear when I was 14, 15, that was the first time. Mm-hmm. I went on fist to fist with my stepfather.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I saw how he pushed away my mom. Like, I don't know what was happening. One of these, scenes at home, like it was so common. Mm-hmm. Like he was, and I jumped. And I went on him. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then I discovered something. There was something I could have control on, and that was my anger. And that's very dangerous. So yeah, those are the feelings I was dealing with in those days.
Like the sensation of release.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, that valve. You open that valve. But,
kind of addictive behavior, right?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that, and you shared the feelings of this kind of. You found a sense of control through anger, things like that. And so now you're like, you're becoming a little bit older and you're in this other place in life, and you start to meet these other more dangerous people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's funny because, they changed me, the movement from this private school to a public school.
Yeah.
And so in that public school, I was the little rich boy in this, so with these, let's say, poor people, they were poor, but they thought, oh, this guy's coming from this Catholic private school, so everybody was bullying at me because of that.
Yeah.
But it came to a point that I couldn't take it anymore. I remember I was telling you, I was so afraid, I would literally shake, and I remember clearly, like it was yesterday, I was buying something on this cafeteria, and I was about to grab my sandwich or something, and I saw this hand coming over my shoulder. This is mine, like always, like every day. But that moment, for me, that was just, okay, this is enough. So I just turned around, saw the guy, I don't even ask him, I don't even say something, I just, And so I was 15, and this guy was 19. There was public school, there were guys, they were over 20 even.
Mm-hmm.
So that resulted in a very bad beating. I received, they kicked me on the ground and they punched me, kicked me. I mean, when I got home that day, it was all beaten up, blood here, everywhere, and bruises and everywhere. So, but then I decided next day, when I went to school, I took a knife with me, a switchblade, and I decided to face them. So I just, I'm going to do something. And when they came again, to take whatever they could from me, because I was a rich boy, I pulled out this knife, and that was, I didn't know how to handle that. And so they look at me and go, look at him, man, look at this guy. And so I don't know how they did it. It was so fast that he took the knife from my hands. But then they went like, they go, like, come. We're going to teach you. If you want to be with us, we're going to teach you how to do this. And so that's how I became part of the gang. And that was the first time in my life, 14 years old. First time in my life that I felt that I belong.
Wow.
That they became kind of a family for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in this time, there was kind of like no parental figure, because everybody was...
Yeah, my stepfather, he was very strict. Like, he was a former captain of the army, and he was a physician.
Yeah.
So very well-instructed guy, a lot of knowledge and stuff. And he was totally like a twin instructor.
Oh, okay.
No one could die. Because I understand, parents, they need to correct. But you also give love, reassurance, and he never did that with me. And so then I found out that with this gang, you can do it. Being this little guy that you try to fight us, okay, that's good, That was the first time I did something like that. Approval. Yeah.
Approval, that's the key word right there. Wow. Yep. Approval. So a lot of you that are listening right now, you're kind of maybe you can relate to the story. Maybe you can see yourself in kind of, you know, these different scenarios in life. I have some similarities to that as well. I've grown up in school and, you know, the feeling of fear and, you know,
everyone in school, they feel that.
Yeah.
It's the difference how you address it.
How you address it.
And what kind of, support they find at home.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you don't have it, you're going to find it somewhere else all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. In my case, it was, I had my dad. He taught me the ropes. So he was an extreme person. So there was that extreme where he was teaching me the ropes and, you know, how to, you know, go back and face the bully and get your lunch money back from the bully kind of thing. And, you know, don't back down and that. But I knew that he would back me up. So I knew that he was always there and he was always available. I knew that, you know, he was.
Even in case it would be there.
Yeah, I knew that part. So that was, I had kind of was able to face my fears and kind of in that way. And then I had intervention after that, so I didn't get to do too much bad things. But then you went from being in, is it Peru that you started off in?
Yeah, Peru.
And then you went to Brazil after?
Yeah, well, before that I went to the military for a couple of years, you know, my family, because I became the black sheep.
Oh,
I would steal things, you know, bring something from my children, from the children, from my mom. And I think whatever it would fit on my backpack, it was me. And then I started selling like pills and little things with marijuana and stuff. Things, you know, to get some money.
Right.
And with these friends, you know, we would go on city buses back in the day. That was even easier, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll go, if there was a lady or lady sitting there, poor lady, you know, I will go like, hey, somebody, I'm Jane. And then she will look at me like, you know, I was.
Yeah.
And if she made a mistake of opening her purse, okay, I will wait for her to give me some coins. I just, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that was crazy, crazy. And so, but after that, I went to the military and then I didn't last there too long. They kicked me out. I was too crazy. And so my family that thought that finally found something, you know, useful to do in the military. Right, they kicked me out. And so I didn't want to go back to any of my family. You know, I just want to, you know, move on. And so I decided to go, I don't know where, just Brazil. And I went to Brazil.
Yeah.
With some money that I managed to get, you know, and mom is always mom. So I called my mom. There's this business, white thing. You know, I just need this so much money, which was a lie. Just took that line and some more money again. Somewhere went to Brazil.
Wow.
And in Brazil, I started again, you know, doing some bad things, with bad people. I lived for a few months in a favela, you know, these very poor areas where the little houses are put together.
What would be the English word for that?
No, it's not.
Like the projects?
No, the project is like
like flats. Like flats.
Yeah, just very poor little houses.
Yeah, yeah,
they don't even have running water or bathrooms inside. No toilets.
Yeah.
There was just one or a couple of holes in the ground. We would do our business there.
God.
Yeah.
That's
And so, the federal police was after me, so I literally went from Brazil. You know, sometimes I think people don't believe me when I share this, but I went through the jungle of Brazil and Peru 32 days.
Oh my gosh.
Running away from them. So, you know, when I got in jail, I knew there were people inside that would kill me if they put me inside.
Oh.
And they locked me in. So by the time I got to my city in Peru, because it was the jungle from Brazil, the jungle from Peru, and then the mountains, and then the coastline with my city. You know, I was with this long beard, skinny, with worms in my flesh. It was so bad, so painful.
So let me understand this, though, but like, this is crazy. So you went from being this little scared cat kid.
I know. If we could go back in time and see the dingo, the 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-old, 12-year-old,
yeah.
Dingo, you wouldn't believe
yeah.
what the 18-year-old dingo would be doing.
Yeah, but like, where's your mind at when you're going through the living in the jungle? I'd be like so like scared.
I know, but there was. I think that's what I think I mentioned at the beginning. It depends. Yeah, it. I think we all are born with a specific personality.
Yeah.
All that life does is add to that.
Yes.
You know, because yeah. there are people some by nature. We say by nature, but there are people that by nature they are like. And they can go into the depressive mode like this right. if you look at them like
yeah.
you know
yeah.
and there are people that are more like aggressive.
Yeah.
So the same circumstance can happen to these two kind of people, yeah. but they will react different.
Mm-hmm.
One will go into depression or even thinking about suicide, mm-hmm. and the other will go into rage, you know, destruction and
yeah.
vengeance, and you know, that was the second. I didn't know at the beginning. But as I told you, when I tasted that you know, when I had the taste of okay, I can do something,
yeah.
I can punch. That changed me.
Yeah.
That changed me. So yeah. And I went through the jungle 30+ days. I say 32 because that's what I think it was, but I know it was 30+ days, and it was a horrific experience, surviving, eating every 2 days somehow, because I didn't know what to eat, only if I saw bananas, and then, you know, okay, there's a banana, then there is, I don't know, maybe other fruits I could, and with the Indian tribes I met, because I had my backpack, it was a huge backpack, machete, a knife, and I try to sleep at night, when you clean it up and setting up little fires around, so spiders and snakes and it's not crocodile. In the Amazon, there's not crocodile. What's the name in English? Lagarto. We say lagarto in Spanish, but I don't remember the word in English. It's not crocodile. Crocodile's in Africa. Yeah, like the South American version of the crocodile. I don't remember the word. Alligator. The kind of alligator there. Yeah. And so, I met an alligator, and I ate snakes. I ate monkey, and you know, so crazy, but I needed to survive.
Yeah.
And and I managed to get to my city. I remember it was my last pair of pants that I traded with a driver of this bus driver.
Yeah.
Was going from Lima to Trujillo, my city.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have any money. So I got to the guy and said, hey, you know what? And I pulled this pair of pants and said, hey, what do you think? He goes, okay, come in. So he dropped me at the kind of the entrance of the city, and I walked for like 30, 40 minutes or more, I remember, to my parents' house,
mm-hmm.
only to find out that they were in a fight again.
Oh.
My mom was not there, and
mm-hmm.
the same story. And that's how I got here. I went to the hospital, got healed with all this little insects and worms in my place,
mm-hmm.
and from there I went to Ecuador, and from Ecuador to Colombia, which I share also with
yeah.
resume.
That's your resume. Yeah, that's a big mouthful right there. I need to process that for a minute. Like, I'm like, man, you know, you went from this little kid. Being scared to now this older, you know, young adult guy who's in the jungle surviving, and you know, just like in pure survival mode, eating from the jungle and selling things, you know,
trading
and,
with the Indian tribes.
Wow.
Yeah, I was afraid that they will, you know, like, how dare not violent, you know.
Yeah, and then that too. Like, how do you even know? You come across these, you know, natives, and you're just like, you don't even know what to expect. They're like going to eat you or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's just crazy. That's just like, that's a big story right there. Like, I mean, did you feel like God was in it? Did you feel God at any moment in any of that time?
No. When I was little, you know, growing up and going to this Catholic private school, we were by part of the curriculum. We needed to go to the church, but I never really connected. My grandmother, she was really, really like strong Catholic. Then my stepfather, he was an atheist.
Okay.
So I didn't believe in God. That was put me in here.
Yeah.
And honestly, seeing the reality of my family, I thought, what God, you know?
Yeah.
If there is a God, why is my family the way it is? So I didn't believe God. I presented my letter to the school board saying, I'm not going to take the religion course.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that because I don't believe God. And so I never really like asked, oh God, please. No, never. Yeah. It wasn't even in my like the slightest idea.
Really?
All I was like, I would care about was, you know, to be my machete, be like, you know, what's the thing, a big sharpen, yeah, and then be aware of my surroundings, and that's it.
So. Okay. So now you're kind of like in this place where you're like, you come out of the jungle. You've traded your pants.
The last pair.
The last pair of pants. So now what?
I got home and I saw my parents, my stepfather, and my mom. They were in a fight. And he opened the door. I remember that clearly. I was gone over a year, more than a year. I was in Brazil. And he opens the door and he goes, he looks at me and he goes, what? And then, well, where's my mom? She's not here. So I thought, no, which is going to be in my aunt's place. So I went to my aunt's and I found her there, drunk, totally drunk, her and my aunt. And I said, oh, this is the same crowd. So the next day, she took me to the hospital. You know, they healed me, took all the worms in my place and stuff. So, yeah. But after, I think it was two months, I took off. I did a robbery in my city with another accomplice.
Mm-hmm.
And with that money, we went to Ecuador, from Ecuador to go.
Wow.
So I was there for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. I don't recall exactly, you know, like the date. I don't have that memory. It was about a couple of months and then I left.
Wow. So I'm just like stunned, like, what would I ask next? So now you're like, you're back home and you've got all the worms removed from eating you alive, basically.
Yeah. You know, that part in the jungle, that was very beautiful experience for me because I didn't know what happened. I just felt like steam, stung or something. And I was like, oh man, you know. And then I checked and I found pieces of an insect because I went like this. So I thought that was it. But a couple of hours later, I started losing my sight in the middle of the jungle. So I could, you know, like everything was becoming like foggy. And I'm so afraid. And I knew because I'd been in the military by that time. I was in the military, so I was trained in survival things and stuff. So I went to the river shore and started watering myself constantly to lower it because my fever was so high. I was trembling like fever. So I would just, you know, pour water on me, water. I grab a t-shirt and I wear it in the, you know, river and put it in my head. And I was losing my sight more and more and more. I was so afraid because then I knew I would die.
Yeah.
And so, you know, little by little, now I know that was God. little by little, I started covering my sight. I started seeing clearer and clearer and clearer. And I was like, okay, but the rest of the journey through the jungle, I lived from this limb. It was so painful. Maybe a nerve, something. I didn't know. When I crossed the Peruvian frontier, you know, few miles after I crossed, few miles inside the Peruvian frontier, I met a group of soldiers.
Yeah.
And they had this little like place, you know, a very poor settlement of soldiers there, Peruvian soldiers from the Peruvian army. Mm-hmm. And you know, they detained me first and then they checked. You know, I was with this beard. That's so crazy. You know, can you imagine these soldiers there and they saw this guy coming up from the middle of the
jungle?
Yeah, you know, like, hey, yeah, stop. Yeah. And there was this guy that he took care of the cows they have because they use cows to have milk. And they, so he took two of the worms from my threshold from the back. And he gave me this kind of capsules with a powder that he put in the cows when they removed it. You know, those little insects that they suck your blood. Or what's the word in English?
Ticks.
Ticks, yeah. Okay. And they pour that powder so the wound won't get infected.
Oh, I see.
So that's what he gave me, and with that I continue my trip through, my journey through the jungle.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was the worms when we moved into here, we were there.
Wow, that's a lot. So you did that, and so where was it that you kind of came to the knowledge of Jesus? How did you come to that?
After I left Peru with this partner, mm-hmm. with this accomplice, and he told me he got this. He knew people in Colombia, that's what he said.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, we need to, you know. So we got this money out of this job.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got to Colombia, it turned out that he knew people there. Mm-hmm. I thought he was just bluffing,
yeah.
But he knew people there. So he knew some, you know, drug dealers and drug lords and everything. But he was the kind of guy that will get drunk in the weekend. You know, I didn't do that. I never was like, you know, a guy that was somewhere on the street all dirty and, you know, mm-hmm. drunk and pass out and drugs. No, never.
Yeah.
Never. I was disciplined. And that in part is thanks to my stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
So he taught me how to handle guns since I was 12.
Okay.
You know, and so I passed my military training. So I ended up being one of the bodyguards for this drug lord. This cartel in Colombia, and that was a very violent time in my life. And I got in trouble again. Trouble. You know, that was my middle name, Citizen Solomon, also from Resurrection. But I don't know if you heard it.
No.
And so that was my middle name too. Wherever I went, and you know, a few months later, I would get in trouble to flee. You know. So I messed with the wrong woman. I was in prison. I didn't know this girl was one of my boss's mistress. Exactly. I didn't know. I wasn't that stupid, you know. I didn't know. So the thing is, I was, you know, that was a death sentence,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So that's so many details in between. I don't know if we have time to share all that, but because they took me to the desert in Colombia. Yeah, I was sleeping, you know, we had a house, all the security team, we had a house where we could go and rest before the next day,
yeah.
If we had a job to do. I was resting there in a hammock, and then suddenly I felt someone put a bag on my head, punch my throat, punch my arms. And they lift me up like a chicken, like a package. Put me inside a car, and they drove. And I don't know if you know this, but whenever someone takes you like that and don't talk to you, it's because they're gonna kill you.
Yeah,
if they either start talking to you like they you know, they use cuss words and they are you so and so you laugh at them or whatever they say, it's because they want to break you and get information out of you.
Mm-hmm.
But if they say nothing, you're done. So they were really quiet. I didn't know who they were. Mm-hmm. And they drove and they finally, you know, they took me out of the car and there was these two cars and I could, you know, feel the sand. And when they moved this, the back, I saw that was a security team. The team, the people I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody told me what happened. And I was, I didn't know. It doesn't matter. It's too late.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they hit me with their guns.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very gross maybe to share this, but the sentence, the way they kill you when you mess with the wrong woman, especially if it's the, you know, the girl, one of the bosses, is they rape you first.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, they rape you, all the men in the team, they rape you, and then they, okay, this is a testimony. They cut your genitalia, put it in your mouth, and they suffocate you with that. And so whenever you, let's say you're walking down an alley and you saw this guy, you know, with the thing here, okay, you know,
mm-hmm.
he messed up with you. And that's how they send a message. Mm-hmm. Don't you dare, you know. Anyway. As you can see, they didn't do that. I understand that was God in that moment. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, they stopped hitting me, and the chief was like, "You know what?" He looked at me and said, "You know what? Get out of here! Get out of here! Get out! Get out! Get out!" So I stood up, all bleeding, and you know, and I started walking backwards, looking at them, and they got into their cars and left. So they thought they left me in the desert to die. I managed to get back to the little town that was controlled by this drug lord. And there I found out that it was a cargo ship in a little port they have. And I managed to get into the cargo ship, and that cargo ship took to Aruba, the Caribbean island, the Dutch Caribbean island. And so in Aruba, I started doing the same things, you know, smuggling, they do with drugs, and moving alcohol and tobacco from Miami to Venezuela. Money, 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 money. And I thought, like, okay, now I'm doing it. You know, it's going to be good. So one day, this police officer stopped me, you know, and I didn't have papers, and he knew I was doing something. But instead of handcuffing me, he pulled out a Bible.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, witness to me. And the beginning, I just knocked because I just wanted to, like, you know, to fake that I was interested. Really, you know, but I didn't believe in God at all.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Colombia working for this cartel, whatever, whenever we had a job, something to do, you know, you know, I always see the other guys, like, taking their crosses or their little rosaries, you know, on their necks, or the little religious figure they had inside the cross, you know, Virgencita, you know, protect me.
Mm-hmm.
And I will kiss my gun, take my gun, my 9mm Beretta, and I will kiss. I call it mi negrita, a little black, you know, little negrita, protect me. And they will get mad at me, say, hey, you don't know that with the guy out there? What? There's nothing out there. What? I will, you know, I will go like that.
Yeah.
But then this police officer talked to me, and it was supernatural. Because I wanted to leave, but there was this pressure in my chest, so painful, Gloria, so painful. Like, really, I couldn't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, what's wrong? I don't know. I said, this pain here. And then he goes, that's Jesus Christ that wants to come into your house. Why do you give him a chance?
Mm-hmm.
I look at this guy, the police officer, and I thought, man, he smoked something because that's Jesus Christ with this pain in my chest. You know, I was so foreign to the idea of church or God or whatever. I was so crazy, you know, from what I heard from him.
Yeah.
But I couldn't take it anymore. I started crying, weeping like a baby.
Oh, my God.
That very, very disgusting picture, you crying as, you know, the slimes and crying. So he grabbed me, sent me somewhere, I don't remember where, and he asked me, do you want to pray? I just nod, and I repeat that prayer. So that's it. And here I am, transformed like this from the night to light.
Wow, that's crazy.
Never again went to like, wanted to use drugs, so not even a cigarette, nor a drink, nothing.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why there is hope.
Yes.
There is hope. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. That's just a crazy, crazy story. Oh my gosh. I'm like, take it back. Like, I have to process that. I have to eliminate the visual. Oh my God.
That's hard.
Okay. So yeah, man, that was like, that's a true, like, you know, that's a true, like, God moment. Like, that's totally supernatural. There's no, like, you know.
There was not an event, like, a big Christian event or something, because I would never go to a church.
Yeah.
So, you know, and totally unexpected. Mm-hmm. This guy, instead of really, you know, like, applying his authority, put me in jail. He put out of my.
Wow, that's just, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, I don't even know where to go from there. It's like, that's just like, so you, like, you just had this crazy supernatural situation happen to you. Like, guys, I know that there's other people out there that maybe not exactly like Nico's, but I know you had some kind of supernatural situation happen to you where you felt like you knew without a shadow of doubt that was God.
Yeah.
You know? For many of us, for me, it was just, you know, it was nothing like that. It wasn't, you know, but, you know, you have come a long, long way, Dinko. Like, you know, that's incredible. The story, the journey, the trauma, you know, I mean, how do you stay sane in something like that? Right. Like, I mean, and you're sitting here and you're saying you're not mentally ill.
You know, definitely it's God.
Yeah.
But what I say is that many times we bring a lot of extra drama in our own drama.
Yeah.
And so we say we get trapped in this victim mode.
Yeah.
You know, look at what they did to me, and you know, my mom, my dad. Or my stepdad, or my grandfather, you know, I could, you know, that was my story, you know, and I would hate him. I planned how to kill him, and you know, all these things, you know, it's like all this rage and all this stuff. So, but somehow I understood that life functions better, or rewards. I don't know. I would say function better when you learn how to be, in a way, practical.
Mm-hmm.
What happened. You cannot go back and undo what happened to you, or even what you did to somebody else.
Right.
Okay, so I understood that, and somehow, even before getting saved, okay, you know, I have to move on. I got in trouble at home, I got in trouble in Peru, I got in trouble in the military, I got in trouble in Brazil, you know what, I got to move on, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And thanks God, in that journey I met God, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Praise God for that. So, that part right there, I'll kind of a little bit elaborate on that, because, you know, for some people listening, you know, there's a lot of people that are listening that follow me on my platform. A lot of people have been through, you know, divorces and things. I went through a divorce. And, you know, there's just lots of things that people want to be stuck in, and there's, they want to stay in the look what they did, look what you did to me kind of, you know, mentality, and it's not going to help.
No, exactly.
Stay stuck there, right?
Yeah, because they think they don't have control over anything else.
Yeah.
So the only thing they believe they can control is their pain and their anger.
Yeah.
So this is my, I'm not letting this go.
Yeah.
Because when I remember, you know, even at least in pain, I feel like I'm control something. I want to feel alive in this pain. But so, let it go. I would say to the audience, it's one of the bravest things a human being can do.
And we thank God because we've been, our sins, Jesus already paid the debt for all of that. There's no, you can't repay it.
Yeah.
So we just have to accept that it's already been done. It's already done. And all we get to do is just, he wants us to enjoy the it's already done moment, right?
Yeah.
Enjoy that, ride on that, and believe that for all of us, right? And so you have a beautiful wife, and you have beautiful children, and they're all so talented.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's another story, because my wife now, she's not the mother of my daughters.
Yeah.
And when I started pastoring, this one, first wife. We started together, first ministry back in 1996. I've been pastoring for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And but somehow, when I was in the hospital, underwent a surgery and hernia, I was working something very heavy. I did not have this thing that was working for something.
Mm-hmm.
And so they took me in some emergency, and then that was the moment she took advantage of and left home. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it coming. And we were not like, separated or, we didn't, I wouldn't say that our relationship grew cold. We were fine.
Yeah.
She went to see me after the surgery. Honey, how are you doing? I'm going to take care of you. Don't worry. I'm going to bring you clean clothes because I was working. So she took my clothes and she was supposed to bring new clothes for the next day. The next day I was being released from the hospital.
Yeah.
Not that much in there. And from there I lost everything, the ministry I had, the fellowship I had. And I was left like a single parent with my three little kids, my twins that were five.
Oh,
and she, the one is here, she was 2.5.
Oh,
and I stood up again, back up, whatever you say. And here I am with this wonderful, powerful ministry.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. You made a comeback.
Yeah.
Awesome. So now you're going to be living here in L.A., and you're going to start, you've already started to develop a ministry.
Yeah.
Much like the one that you have in Peru.
In Peru, yeah.
Wow. So tell us about that. Tell us a little bit about the ministry now. Where people can find you, and people that want to, that are living here in LA and things like that. And
sure.
How do you get involved? And
Before, when I say I was part of a fellowship that was very good in discipleship, very good, I believe, in discipleship.
Yeah.
And the training of the character, that's discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
But they were a little, I would say, not little, legalistic in some things. And when this thing happened with his wife, so I ended up leaving that fellowship. I was by myself, actually. They took everything from me. And so it took me years to realize, to understand the vision that God has put in me for this ministry of revolution. So what I understand now is the church, it needs to be more than just, in the traditional sense, more than just a church.
Yeah.
It needs to be a place where, people, and I love working with young people, with youth, mm-hmm. or young adults also, where they can find a place of expression,
mm-hmm.
and on the foundation of Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. of course, a place where they can develop their God-given gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why my church in Peru, Revolution, so over 200 people, and 90% of them are millennials and younger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of, you see the picture there, on the screen. So it's like, they're on fire for God. That's why maybe 2 years ago, back in 2018, God started dealing with me coming here. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to realize that until I really, you know, I could say, okay, this is God. And so this last year, by the end of last year, I decided to move on. I said, okay, God, here I am. I said, here I am.
Wow, that's a lot of different, you know, places in your life where you had to, you know, let go and trust God.
Yeah.
You know, that he's in control of whatever the ministry is. You know, that's a hard for some men to do. That's a difficult decision to make.
It is, yeah.
Because sometimes we get our identity lies in that, right? And developing that ministry where it is, and now you got to uproot, come to another place, and then start all over again. You know, yeah. And it may be different.
Yeah.
It may even look different. But you have to kind of figure that out as you go along and
yeah.
go with the flow with that. And that's a whole new kind of learning, and you know,
yeah, the culture. And
culture.
The way people relate to each other, yes, it's a bit of language.
Yeah.
It's different. It's different. So, but that's the truth. I like this sensation, this feeling,
mm-hmm.
this thrill. Oh man, yeah. I want to see what God's going to do. For me, that's the way I define faith. Faith
yeah.
is saying, okay, God, you know, I'm standing in this and this. What's when you where you jump from to the pool, that little
the diving board.
The diving board. So faith for me is like I'm standing in this diving board.
Yeah.
And God says, God tells me, jump.
Yeah.
And I jump while the pool is empty.
Yeah.
Trusting that God would fill it up.
Yeah.
That's for me faith. That's faith for me.
Totally. Yeah.
And so far, you know, 28 years serving the Lord, he's been faithful.
Yeah.
Every time. I don't, I can't wait for the right circumstances.
Yeah.
I just move and God moves the circumstances.
Yeah. So your identity, you what I'm sensing from you, feeling from you, tell me if I'm right or wrong, I don't know. But what I'm sensing is that your identity is not in the name of that ministry.
No.
Your identity
is in God, in the calling of God. In the moment I stop answering the call of God, I lose my identity.
Yeah.
And you know, with all the respect I have for many, many, many pastors I know through the years in the different countries, different continents.
Yeah.
Sadly, many pastors they relate their identity to their ministry.
Yes.
And if that ministry is gone, They disappear.
Yeah.
That's why for me it's so powerful to be able to learn to let go.
Yeah.
When I was deciding, I had talked to different pastors before making the move to come to the States to work.
Yeah.
Some of them they say, Dinko, you know, but what's gonna happen? You know, you leave that church, that ministry in the room.
Yeah.
You know, what if? All the what ifs, you know, the what if.
Yeah.
Okay, so no, at the end, that never was. That was mine. That was never mine. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That was never mine. And it didn't belong to me.
Yeah.
I was just someone that was in charge of leading. I mean, and I relate now to my ministry in Peru. You know, I oversee. They call me. They consult with me in some sensitive positions.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not my identity. People can say, oh, because I'm running all the pastoral revolution in Peru. Yeah. But I'm here now.
Yeah.
So that's my name.
Yeah.
That's called.
Yes. Yes. That's where it's at right there. That's what I like. That right there. Yep. That's what I know because I've been there. I've been in a ministry and I know what it feels like to wonder what your identity is, and then to find that, you know, that is not your identity. Your identity is in Jesus.
Right.
And no matter where you are, that you're just the vessel.
Yes.
You're just there being available to be used.
Yes.
You know, and if it looks like that, you know. if it looks like coming back to California, it looks like coming back to California, you know. But no matter what it is, we get to go along for the ride.
Yeah.
And, you know, for some personalities, that's a really cool ride. That's an awesome, you know, roller coaster ride.
Roller coaster. It's a roller coaster.
Like a Magic Mountain. You know, for others, that's not okay. Like, they don't have, it's not in them to do that, you know.
Yeah.
But everyone's different. So, Dinko Zambrano, wow, that's crazy. Anything that you want to say before we close out?
Believe in God, dare to believe in God. If you haven't, like, you know, given your life to Jesus, this is not religion. It doesn't have to, it's not related to what church you're going. It's the, you know, it's relationship. It's not religion. And if you happen to be in that spot in life where you say, you know, there is no hope, this is so difficult, I wish my circumstances were different, or I don't know where the camera is, this side or that side, this side, I think.
I don't know.
I'm looking at the screen, so anyway, I just wanted you to know that I'm looking at you and say, I want to say, just, you know, believe in God. Give him a chance. You might live the rest of your life in hope when you see what he can do through someone that decides to believe.
Yes.
So just do it. Don't be afraid. And there is hope. If you were connected with us since the beginning, you know, my life had all the ingredients for failure. But now I'm a vessel of honor in his hands. So yeah, that would be it.
Amen. Amen. So with that said, guys, Dico Zambrano. Dico Zambrano. But you can find him, follow him on his Facebook link down there, and
Instagram and YouTube.
Exactly. And TikTok.
TikTok.
Yeah, we gotta have a TikTok, you know. So bye, guys. Thank you for being here. I see you guys. I see lots of you guys coming. I see, wow, look at that. Awesome. All right, bye, guys.